I'm glad you can see me smiling. I've just been so happy. It started coming in, driving down in the misty rain. There were some houses with Christmas lights, and then parking. I found a good spot. You know, walking in the misty rain to here, and then just kind of jumping in with everybody, you know, to learn what we were going to do. And I realized, those of you who didn't sit on Thursday, when I came in, I was like, I was really whining. And I just had one of these days at work where things were frustrating me, and I kind of complained a bit. But what I realized this morning is, you know, we're really having an opportunity to do beginner's mind, really, because we're all beginners. And, you know, at work, I don't feel like a beginner anymore. And so it's work to kind of get back to that not knowing, that it's not predictable, that I don't know what I'm going to say, or I don't know what other people are going to say. It's all new. But today, like, we don't have to do that work because it's so straight it is. And it's just so, it's so wonderful. It's just, for me, very joyous. You know, we started sitting here in this space about a year ago, and this is our first Zazen Kai. And there are some of us who've been sitting together a long time, and others of who are new. And this is, you know, new for all of us doing this here. So it's just, for me, really special, and I just feel such gratitude to all of you who are doing this, too. So, you know, it sort of raises the question, though, of, like, what are we doing here, right? And, in fact, you know, I think we're all sort of doing different things in some different ways, right? We come with different intentions. There's variations in our practice. Some of us are doing Shikantaza, others of us are working with koans, some of us are following our breath. And so, you know, you could say that, you know, we're not really all sort of doing the same thing, even though we're sort of doing all of this. And then when you pile on top of that, that each of us sort of brings our own history, our own memories, our own experience with other teachers or other sanghas, or our own personal, you know, history that of our life that brought us to this moment. And then we also, I think, all bring so our hopes and dreams and our imagination for the future, and that's also unique to each one of us. So those two things are sort of the memory of the past and the imagination and hope for the future. Those two things are kind of intersecting right here and right now. And when we come here and we arrive here and we arrive in our body and arrive in our Zazen, that's when, you know, we're sort of waking up to the reality of just now, which contains all of that in the past and all of that in the future. So, you know, what you could say is that those things that are the memories and the imaginations, you know, are sort of what we might call our small mind, you know, our self. We're all here kind of looking for the big mind that's that intersection right here and right now. So what is this self? Well, I recently came across, I just thought, this really great metaphor. Maybe it's, you've heard it before, but it was new to me. And it's the metaphor of an eddy. So if you think about an eddy, it's, you know, all these different drops of water, and also like the leaves that are floating on the surface, and maybe the little fishes and tadpoles that are in there. And they kind of swirl around, the stream kind of flows along, and then they swirl around, and there's, based on how the water is flowing and then how the bank is and any other things that might be sticking out, it sort of creates this like pool. school that can go on indefinitely, you know, but usually not. It goes on, and at some point it releases. And so you could say that the eddy is composed of all these different things, the different water and the leaves, and that there's nothing there that you can say, this is the eddy, right? It's just like the water comes in and it leaves, and the tadpoles come in and they leave, and leaves come in. And at the same time, there's clearly something there, right? And so to say that there isn't an eddy would be a mistake, but to say that there is this thing is also a mistake. And so that's really, I think, just a great metaphor for emptiness, right? So emptiness doesn't mean there's nothing there. There's something there, but it's not fixed, and it's always changing. And it entirely dependent on the causes and conditions that create that particular moment. But you can't hold on to it, right? Because it's constantly changing. And, you know, so that's a metaphor for ourself. And it's also a metaphor for our Sangha, right? And if you think about your own life, and all of us here are reasonably experienced practitioners, and think of all the different ways that Sangha has manifested for you over the years, it's constantly changing, and yet there's something there. But what is that thing that's there that we can say, oh, that's it, that's it? So I think that, in fact, part of the cause of our suffering is that we kind of resist this eddiness, right? And we're so caught up in that mind of memory and imagination that it's very hard for us a lot of times to actually experience, really feel that eddy. Right? And so we kind of stick to, you know, the things that we can notice, right? We know our memory, and we know, you know, our imagination and our fantasies and all of these things. And even if somebody says to us, well, like, come on, your memory is not actually that reliable, right? We all know this. The memory is not any more real than anything else that's going on. And, you know, I think any of us who have siblings or cousins or, you know, people who have been in our lives a long time, and you ask them to tell you the same story about an event that you were in, you know that, like, they had a completely different experience, right? But at the same time, like, you kind of fix, like, this is me, and this is my memory, and this is my truth. And because we're sort of holding on to that, we don't actually allow ourselves to drop into that sort of more eddy quality. And so, you know, I'm telling you all this, and I am, you know, totally sure that you've all heard something like this before, right? This is not like, like I haven't invented the wheel here, okay? And so the problem, I think, for us is that we know this, but we don't feel it somehow, right? It's not enough for me to just tell you, oh, you're an eddy, and that emptiness is there, and you're always changing, and your memory isn't something you can hold on to, because we're walking around, and that's not our experience a lot of times, right? We don't experience that. And so then we come to the conclusion there must be something lacking in our experience, right? There must be something else that I can get that will allow me to experience, you know, this emptiness or the eddy or whatever reality, okay? And that becomes this thing that we now fix onto. It's yet another, actually, it's another aspect of our small mind saying, latching on to something in the future, but it's actually very motivating for us. It kind of brings us to practice, too. So what do we do, you know, with this whole sort of conundrum, really? Because every time we try and say what it is that we're aiming for or we're trying to do or we want, you know, that's already, we're off the path again, right? We're not walking that path, we're thinking. So I'd like to look at this from the perspective of a koan. And this koan is case 68 in the Blue Cliff Record. It's called Yang Shan's What's Your Name? It goes like this. Yang Shan asked Sang Shen, what is your name? Shen said, Hui Qi. Yang Shan said, Hui Qi, that's me. Sheng said, my name is Hui Jian. Yang Shan laughed aloud. Okay, I'll read that again. Yang Shan asked Shan Sheng, what is your name? Sheng said, Hui Qi. Yang Shan said, Hui Qi, that's me. Sheng said, my name is Hui Jian. Yang Shan laughed aloud. So, you know, it's like a kind of weird puzzle, okay? And so I'm just going to give you some background to this. Yang Shan and Song Shen, when they're referred to in this koan, they're being referred to by what's called their mountain names, okay? So at the time that this koan is being recounted, both of these individuals are now abbots of their own monastery, and their monastery is named after the mountain, and they are named after their monastery in that mountain. And so that's Yang Shan and San Shen. But Yang Shan's ordination name, okay, his Dharma name was Hui Qi, and that's actually translates as bright silence. And Song Shen's ordination name was Hui Jian, which is bright in this way. So they share this character, bright. So the question of, you know, what is your name? You know, that's just kind of the most basic, simple question, one that we ask others regularly and others ask us regularly. We say and write our name, you know, throughout the course of our life. It's so ordinary that we don't even pay attention to it. What is your name? And I think that that's one of the wonder, for me personally, it's one of the things I really appreciated about having a Dharma name, because every time I have to say my Dharma name, it's like, it brings me right here, right? If I'm just wandering about introducing myself to somebody at work, it's like, whatever. But when I say my Dharma name, it reminds me, you know, this is something. This is something. Just saying my name is something. So then in the story, Song Shen gives the teacher's name as his name. He's meeting, at this point that the story is taking place, he actually isn't yet a teacher, right? He's still going about on pilgrimage. He's come to the monastery of, I'm all confused about their names, so Yang Shan, okay? And he's still, Yang Shan is the teacher, and he's called Yang Shan, but Song Shen knows his teacher's Dharma name, okay? And so he gives his teacher's name as his. Well, that's interesting. You know, is a student different than a teacher? I think that's a question, you know, we have to ask ourselves throughout the course of our practice. And actually, it's beyond just teacher and student, you know. Who are you different from? Are you different from everybody else here in this room, or is there something that's really the same? And what is that difference? I always love the kind of vulgar teaching of Sawaki Roshi, who says you can't exchange as much as a fart with another person, right? It's like we are not anybody else. Your farts are your farts. Your name is your name. You are who you are, right? That is the truth of our aloneness, of our just our own unique individuality. Nobody can ever truly know who you are completely, and even you can't know who you are completely. You know, at the same time, the koan, I think, is pointing out that Yang Shan and Song Shen are interrelated, right? They share this common name, and that flowing back and forth of the names between the two of them is free. And that the separation between them that we all feel, right, I am a separate, unique individual, is also not real. And that the two things can move back and forth between each other. And, you know, the fact is, we have been absorbing, you know, the entire world, the soil, the earth, the sun, the rain, our mother's milk, our mother's blood, you know, our family history. All of these things have been coming into us since we were born. Before we were born, we're not this separate thing. We are part of everything. And we know that from science, but we don't even have to be scientists. We can just really think about what our experience has been in our life to remember that we're not just this separate, you know, planet revolving around some distant star. And that kind of interdependence is the metaphor of Indra's net, right? So Indra's net, if you haven't heard of it, is if you imagine, you know, this vast net that spreads to the whole universe, and we're sort of, each one of us sort of occupies one of those junctures where the different strands meet. But each one of those junctures is related to everything else that goes on the net, no matter how far away it is. And not only is related, but if you imagine that kind of little juncture sort of being a jewel, it's going to reflect all of them, and it's going to reflect back. And so by being at one of these junctures and incarnating in a body, you know, we are absorbing everything that is out there, and we're reflecting back everything that is out there. And so the idea that we have this separate, independent, isolated, alone ego is a total delusion, right, when you think about it from that perspective. So, you know, as I said, you know, I think part of what we struggle with is that we desperately desire to feel that, right? And not just to know it, and not just to hear somebody giving a Dharma talk say it. And the fact is, you know, if you've been practicing for a while or just paying attention for a while, you know that sometimes you do have these moments of experience, right? They're not, it's not some thing that's completely unheard of. You know, maybe we hear the bell and we're like, oh, there's the bell, you know? Or maybe we're bending down to tie our shoe, and suddenly at that moment, we're just very aware that we're bending down to tie the shoe. It's not a mystery. We're driving, we're paying attention to what's going on the road. Oh, we're driving, we're paying attention to what's going on in the road. But I think that what frustrates us sometimes is that we have this idea that our awakening experience is supposed to be something else, right? And it's not tying our shoe, and it's not listening to the bell, and it's not enjoying a meal. It's some other thing that's bigger and badder and more, you know, more comprehensive in some way. And then when we come to sit, where we may, if you're like me, you know, have loaded a lot of expectations onto it about what we can expect from our practice, and then we come to sit, and you know, it's boring, it's painful, it's boring, it's tiring, it's boring, you know, it's frustrating, goes on and on and on. And well, yeah, sometimes it's really good, but a lot of times it's not really good. And so does that mean we're doing something wrong? So I think that really is that fundamental point for our practice, is to investigate that, right? What are our expectations around what it means to be interrelated, connected, alive person? You know, what are we loaded onto that? And when we drop those thoughts that we were so loaded onto our expectations for that, what do you have at that moment? Every time you just drop that thought, even if it's only for a split second, there you are. And that's why we say practice is enlightenment, right? So in other words, to kind of sum up what I've been saying, is that that we're able to kind of verify the reality of our non-separation, you know, our eddiness, is in two kind of ways, right? And one way was the way I was just talking about, is that way of practice, where when we drop, just even for a moment, our thoughts, our expectations, and we just return to our breath, return to our body, return to our practice, there we are. But there's another way also, I think, that's really important. And that's really, I would say, the way of the bodhisattva, or you could say the way of action, okay? Because when we act on our understanding of interconnectedness, we also are able to verify the truth of that reality, okay? And so one of the things is that, you know, when we act to help another person or to be present for another person, we do that because deep down inside we know that we're part of this person, right? This is not something separate from us. And then when we acknowledge that, we realize that we don't have to worry that we're not able to do enough or we're not going to do the right thing. And I think that that can sometimes be an obstacle for us and prevent us from really acting freely because we second guess ourselves, and we're constantly, you know, sort of holding our action up to some kind of standard that we're afraid we're not going to meet. And yet, if we know that each of our actions kind of comes from being this jewel on Indra's net, then we don't have to worry about whether it's enough or whether it's even the best, because the net is there, we're connecting all of us, right? And it sort of can free us from this, that judgment that we might have on our actions. And it also enables us, I think, to not feel overwhelmed. You know, I know in my life I've often just felt kind of overwhelmed with the magnitude of the problems in the world, magnitude of things I have to do, you know, whatever. And yet, when you can drop down to realize I'm just one jewel on Indra's net, then I don't need to be worrying about the magnitude. I'm just responding in that moment, acting in that moment. As some folks in the Sangha said, you know, bringing the macaroni and cheese. That's all we really need to do. And the other thing about that sense of interconnectedness that I think also liberates us in our action is that we realize that we don't actually have to see the result of what we do. And that's the other side of it, is often we do things and we don't know, well, like, did that work? Did it not? Did this Dharma talk any good? You know, like, we don't know the result of our action. And in fact, we really can never know the result of all of our actions. They spread out throughout the whole universe, and knowing that can liberate us from that fear that, you know, can hold us back. And ultimately, I think it helps us realize that there are kind of no givers and no receivers in the world of action, right? That idea is part of that small mind of this unique body and this unique, separate, isolated being. But when you're just one jewel on the net, then, you know, who's giving and who's receiving? Both are reflecting off of each other. Both are emanating to each other. So, you know, I'll just end, with a couple, just the last thought. You know, I feel like this Zazen Kai is really auspicious for us. We're right you know, it's just about a year, as I said, that we've been sitting together. We're right on the eve of Rohatsu, that Buddha's awakening, and we're coming together, doing this together. And I read another quote by Sawaki Roshi, who said that, you know, it's like a charcoal fire in a hibachi. If you put in one little coal, it will go out right away. But if you gather up many small coals, each glowing just a little, then the fire will flare up. So we don't need to worry about how bright our coal is, how much flame we have to offer. Just show up with our Bodhi mind and the fire will flare up. So the last line of the koan, Yangshan laughed out loud. Don't forget that. Let's have fun.